The Japanese economy stumbles along.
And workers adjust to a new normal in Tokyo.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, March 16th. Straight ahead, the panic selling has stopped in Japan. What's going on there? It's the end of the bank bailout as we know it. What have we learned? And one man buys the world's most expensive dog. All that coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
The Japanese government today evacuated the employees of the Fukushima nuclear plant. They may return soon, though.
But for a lot of businesses not too far from that plant, workers have fled until further notice. We're talking about German carmaker BMW and car part maker Continental, among companies moving employees completely out of Japan for now. Julian Heath works with companies dealing with disasters such as the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. His firm is called Control Risks, and he's with us on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. You are currently working with companies in Japan about how they are responding. What are you telling them?
At the moment, we're telling them that the environment is safe outside the areas that have been defined as exclusion zones. The challenge is that everyone's on a roller coaster and will be, I think, for some time to come. They're confronting aftershocks and earthquakes, some 420-odd since the main earthquake last Friday.
What kind of situations have you had to deal with over there in this crisis?
The most confronting, I think, is for companies that have a mixed workforce of expatriates and Japanese, and making the decision to actually evacuate their expatriate workforce, which clearly, you know, they're working together as a team, and then suddenly elements of that team, you know, are withdrawn. Clearly, that's quite destabilizing.
What are the toughest decisions companies, you think, have had to make in this situation?
You know, considering the cost of relocating business either within Japan or actually shifting it offshore, with limited information and misinformation, is the most confronting.
Julian Heath, Director of Operations and Standards at Control Risks. Julian, thank you.
Steve, my pleasure.
There are now questions being raised about the 40-year-old reactors at Fukushima, which were made by American energy powerhouse General Electric. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Soon after General Electric rolled out its Mark I model boiling water reactor back in the 1960s, critics questioned whether the small containment structure could withstand a serious accident. Edwin Lyman is with the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Containment structures are typically large reinforced concrete buildings that are very expensive. And so any way to reduce the cost of the containment was appealing to the industry.
Now, concerns are being raised about the two dozen GE Mark I reactors still operating in the U.S., from Alabama to Minnesota to New Jersey. GE says the reactors are safe and were retrofitted back in the 1980s to guard against overheating. Nonetheless, the company's efforts to boost reactor sales, especially to developing countries like India, may suffer from a global pullback from nuclear technology. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Meanwhile, the economic effects of all this continue to ripple. Toyota says it's going to keep its Japanese factories closed for at least another week. Many other auto plants are still closed as well, which could cause problems for U.S. car makers. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
Subaru's canceled overtime shifts at its American plant. It had been running them for more than a year, but now it's worried about running out of parts. Michael McHale is the spokesman for Subaru, and he says the company is trying to assess the situation both here and in Japan.
In the U.S., the majority of our parts are locally sourced, but there are a few critical components that come from Japan. So it behooves us to then go check rather than making cars we can't finish.
He says it'll be days before Subaru knows what kind of shape its Japanese suppliers are in. And even if those suppliers are working, there are big logistical problems like rolling blackouts and damaged roads and ports. Michael Robinett is an auto industry analyst at IHS Global Insight. He says to varying degrees, the global auto industry's supply chain runs through Japan.
Really, there's nobody that is not going to be affected by this at some point.
He says that means production hiccups, not just for the Japanese carmakers, but the big three, the Europeans, and the Koreans, too. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The Japanese stock market had a big rebound today. It's up 5% after falling 10% yesterday. Let's get more on that from Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group. He's with us now from Boston. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's going on? Did Japanese investors suddenly decide they made a big mistake in selling their stocks over the last couple of days?
I think that's part of the story. You know, the market was off 18% since the tsunami hit, and I think realistically, that's overdoing it for what should be a long-term factor. But also, I think the central bank, Japanese central bank, has indicated it's going to be buying some securities. And I think by pulling out all the stops once again, that's also heartened investors.
And I think to the tune of something like $700 billion. Richard, with these stocks fluctuating wildly and the central bank pumping in a ton of money, I have to say it sounds somewhat like what happened here a few years ago with the financial crisis. Are there similarities?
There are. Number one similarity is that both responses were in the context of what appeared to be an outright panic. Where they differ, however, is that back in 2008, when the U.S. Central Bank first started intervening in a very big way, we were essentially looking at the collapse of the financial system. Major financial institutions were going down. In Japan's case, I think they're principally responding to a short-term event, not a cratering financial system.
Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Word from the government this morning, the housing market still has a lot of recovering to do. Housing construction starts fell by the biggest number in 27 years.
Looking for more numbers, stocks, big mergers, economic data, they're all at our website, marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, March 16th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Radio Chio.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson. Well, it looks like we may have a federal budget for another few weeks at least. The House passed a stopgap funding measure yesterday that cuts $6 billion in spending over a three-week period. It's expected to be approved by the Senate and signed by the president this week. For more on all this, we're joined from Washington now by the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, Democratic Senator Kent Conrad. Good morning.
Good morning.
How long can these short-term budget measures continue?
Well, they shouldn't continue much longer because it's an incredibly inefficient way to run any large entity, certainly the federal government.
Well, you're one of the six senators who's in this gang of six that may be the best hope, some think, for getting some kind of a compromise on the budget. Are tax increases on the table in that group?
We're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar that we spend. That means if you tried to do this just on the spending side of the ledger, you'd have to cut everything 40%. Social Security, Medicare, defense, that's just not realistic. Revenue is low, expenditures are high, both have to be addressed.
How important do you think it is that this gets solved this year before we get into a presidential election year?
I think it's critically important. The kind of long-range, comprehensive arrangement that is clearly needed is just unlikely to happen in a presidential election year. We need to act this year to put in place a plan that begins modestly, but then has big and bold action as you go through the remaining 10 years of the budget cycle.
Do you think that the events that are going on in Japan and in the Middle East and across North Africa have changed the dynamic in terms of our economic recovery?
Yes, I think without question. Rising oil prices threaten the recovery. What's happening in Japan causes another blow to confidence. So I think there's no question that these events that are external are having an adverse effect on our own recovery, which has really been proceeding in a pretty healthy way.
Do you think the Fed should continue its $600 billion bond buying program?
Yes, I do. I think most economists now believe that that has contributed to economic recovery. But again, what is so essential is that we put in place a long-term plan that brings the debt down. And if we do it, it'll pay big dividends for job creation and for opportunity for the people that we all represent.
Democratic Senator Kent Conrad, chair of the Senate Budget Committee, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Well, the big bank bailout from a couple years back kept the country's economy from going into depression. That's according to regulators of the Troubled Asset Relief Program. But did implementing TARP at the height of the financial crisis lower the risk of another one in the years to come? Former Senator Ted Kaufman chairs the Congressional Oversight Panel, which oversees the TARP, by the way. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Your last report, was TARP a success?
Well, it was, like all things, it had some good things and bad things. The really positive thing is that, you know, you go back to the time when it was created, that we thought we were going into a depression, and we avoided that, so that was the good news. The other good news is that originally the people were talking about it costing $700 billion. It's now be about $25. Bad news is that by bailing out the banks, which is the basic part of the program, we set up moral hazard, which means that we're concerned about that banks could now feel they're too big to fail and therefore take risks. That would be bad. And the second thing is, I think it's clear the program did a lot more for Wall Street than it did for Main Street.
You mentioned the risks that these big banks are still taking. Are we thinking differently now? Have the financial system habits of the past gone away?
Well, we don't know. And I think the report, clearly the panel is very concerned about that. I mean, when you're in a situation where you have the rating agencies giving better ratings to larger banks, which seems to imply that they think they're too big to fail, then that's a very serious problem in terms of systemic risk and in terms of risk to the entire system.
What would happen had Treasury and Congress not gotten involved and there was no TARP?
That's a good question. I think you never can go down a road that you didn't travel, but clearly we did not have a depression, which I think most people at the time, you got to go back and see what the financial panic was, and clearly TARP was a piece of that. So it would have been very bad if we had not put TARP in.
What lessons have we learned with TARP?
Well, I think we've learned that we've got to be careful about moral hazard, whatever we go into. We have to have programs that deal with everyone's problems, not just with Wall Street's problems, that there probably should have been more limits on what Wall Street can do based on the money. We should have had a housing program that was much different than the one we had, a whole bunch of lessons like that.
Former Senator Ted Kaufman, chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel. Sir, thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, if I told you that 80% of Americans went on the internet once a week, probably not too surprising, right?
No, not at all.
No. But what if I told you that 80% of Americans under the age of 5 are on the internet once a week? That is the new finding from the Joan Ganz Cooney Center and Sesame Workshop, to which I say, we've always got kid-friendly stuff at Marketplace.org, as long as the kids like quantitative easing anyway.
They can spell quantitative.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at Marketplace.org/podcasts.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, March 16th in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Back to Tokyo now, on the periphery of natural and nuclear disaster. Life goes on, sort of. Yuichiro Nakajima is an investment banker in the city's financial district. He's with us now. Hello.
Hello.
Describe the city for us right now. Is it normal? Are people still going to their offices?
Well, the city of Tokyo is subject to power rationing. That's affected the train service and other forms of public transport. So it is far from normal. People are having to spend much longer time to get into the office. Some firms have actually told staff to stay at home. Indeed, some other companies have started sending their expats out of Japan. So it is by no means a normal situation.
But that's mostly, you're saying, because of the electricity situation and not because people are scared to go outside.
I don't think we've got to that stage. I think certainly people are worried about what's going on in Fukushima with the nuclear power plants. But there is no sense that an explosion is imminent or indeed that nuclear or radioactive materials floating down on Tokyo from Fukushima, which is several hundred kilometers away. You know, okay, there's always going to be some people who think like that, but most of the people, particularly those who have office work to do, you know, I don't think they're subscribing to that line of thinking.
What about buying things like food and water? I've seen pictures of empty shelves at the stores. Are you able to get things that you need?
Well, it has been a little bit difficult to secure supply of certain items. Around where I live, it's been toilet paper, dairy products, instant food. But the government, as you may have noticed, the government has called on people not to engage in such hoarding behavior. And I think slowly that problem is being resolved, certainly where I am. I couldn't speak for the entire area of Tokyo.
Yuichiro Nakajima, an investment banker joining us from Tokyo. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you.
Well, back here at home, Jeremy, the government this morning said that wholesale food and energy prices jumped by the most in almost 2 years,
right,
which will be no surprise to you if you've been to the supermarket or the gas station.
Yeah, really. $4 a gallon here in California.
And that's not what are you talking about, milk or gas?
Probably both. Right?
But costs of everything else were pretty much stable, not much in terms of inflation. And the Federal Reserve concurred. When they met yesterday, they kept interest rates near zero, a sign the U.S. economic recovery needs all the help it can get, especially with the catastrophe in Japan, unrest in the Middle East, and a debt crisis in Europe. Marketplace's David Gura has more.
Like many economists, Hamilton College professor Ann Owen scrutinizes statements from the Fed.
The tone of this is much more optimistic than it was in January.
The Fed said the economic recovery is on a firmer footing. Unemployment is down, spending is up, and so is business investment. The central bank has kept interest rates low, and it'll continue to buy hundreds of millions of dollars of treasury bonds. But the housing market hasn't recovered, and commodity prices are volatile.
If one of the things that, say, is driving oil prices is the instability in the Middle East, well, the Fed can't do anything about that.
And Martin Neal Bailey of the Brookings Institution says the Fed isn't in a position to react to the disaster in Japan.
They have pretty much pulled out all the stops already.
But he says it's important to remember what happened after other disasters, like Hurricane Katrina and 9/11.
They typically don't have much effect on GDP. It's actually quite hard to see any impact of those events.
He predicts the Japanese economy may suffer for a quarter or two, but when the country starts to rebuild, there'll be a surge in public spending and investment, and that could benefit the U.S. economy. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally, a businessman in China, Jeremy, just paid gobs and gobs of money for a red Tibetan Mastiff puppy named Big Splash.
Wow.
Yeah, he made a big splash, all right. The pup is the world's most expensive dog.
Huh.
Yeah. In China, I don't know if you know this, but Tibetan Mastiffs have become something of a status symbol there. If you have one of those, you're, you know, sort of in the higher echelons of society, right?
Yeah.
The coal baron who bought Big Splash paid $1.5 million for this dog.
Whoa.
Yeah, for that status. You got to ask, who's walking whom?
You also, I also wonder if you're walking around with a Tibetan dog in China, are you, like, is it, would the police confiscate it if they found out that it was a, I don't know.
Maybe you call it Dalai Lama.
You,
I don't know. No, you probably
don't
do that.
Call
That's
it
something
Dalai
you
Lama.
Don't call the dog
Definitely
in China.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Call him Big Splash.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.